Jadeveon Clowney is in town visiting the New York Jets. No word yet on whether or not he has signed. We were all, of course, very excited about the news yesterday of Mike Williams. And sort of the peak, I think, at this point of what's been a very, very impressive offseason for Joe Douglas early on. For all the talk about how Joe Douglas was asleep at the wheel and when are we going to wake up and sign somebody, he's been a busy man. I'm Glenn Naughton with Jet Nation Radio and JetNation.com. Be sure to log into JetNation.com where you can register and become a part of what is the most active Jets message board on the web. Big show tonight. Myself, Chris Dillon, will be joined by Zach Rosenblatt of The Athletic. Everyone else should be jumping in here in just a few minutes. Wild Wave, how we doing, buddy? And Zach will be joining us a little bit later on. Dylan's going to hop in here in just a few seconds once he's ready. And I just got a message from Chris that he will be on the way momentarily as well. A lot to go over. I discussed some of it last night on a show with Scott Mason of Play Like a Jet. We talked, of course, about what the Jets should do at number 10. And more, I'm seeing fans jump on board with the idea of Brock Bowers at 10, the Georgia tight end. I myself said weeks ago I would stop talking about it. Didn't think it was going to happen. Thought he was a lock to go to the Chargers. But now with Mike Williams on board, with the tackles on board, the O-line fixed to a degree, there seems to be growing momentum. As I mentioned, Mel Kiper, and I think this was the second time Kiper did it. Mel Kiper had the Jets taking Bowers at 10. And I've been going back and forth with folks, and there's, we're just going to agree to disagree on this. Dylan will let me know once he's ready, and we can hop him in. But right now, Bowers, there's a lot of talk about, should he be the pick at 10? And it's a polarizing thing. I don't understand why. If you look around the league, you see what some of the best teams did last year with having game-changing tight ends, which is what he would be, and a receiver, and a slot guy. Could do a bunch of different things. Let's get Dylan in here. Dylan, how are we doing, buddy?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm fired up about the Mike Williams thing. I think everyone's excited about that, even with, coming off the ACL. He's a guy who's been healthy throughout his career. You look at the previous 5 years leading up to this year, his numbers were outrageous. And you say he's a number two, and he will be, but really, if he's at the top of his game, if he's fully recovered, he has number one type ability. And he's proven that. And even, again, in this offense, with whatever they're going to ask him to do, he's going to have the chance to make some big-time plays as long as the Jets have a healthy Aaron Rodgers under center. But couldn't get you on last night. That was all sort of not really – well, Scott and I were already planning to do a show to talk about tackle or Bowers, and then the Williams news broke, so we jumped on that. But what are your thoughts on Williams? You haven't chimed in on that yet.
Yeah, I think last week it was the three of us, you, me, and Chris, sat up here, and we talked about the available wide receivers, and we said after Mike Williams, it's a big fall off. And now that he is secured, I do think it is the closest thing to a 1B. With Garrett Wilson. Obviously, when he was in Los Angeles, he had Keenan Allen, so he was kind of overlooked and kind of just labeled as a wide receiver too. But no, I think he is a 1B here with Garrett Wilson. I saw somebody say that he was the number one. I'm like, come on now. Garrett Wilson is the number one. Like, we can kind of, except I don't want to call it homerism because Garrett Wilson is such a good player, but like,
yeah,
this is the time where you have to like stand on the fact that the Jets have a homegrown wide receiver one. So it is a 1B, but it is the closest thing. I love the pork roll, egg and cheese thing, the whole bit. Like, I love everything about it. I wasn't really like that enthused about him when he was released from the Chargers. Obviously, I know he's a superior player compared to anybody we have, but outside, that's also the case for a lot of wide receivers on the free agent market still.
Hunter Renfrow.
Exactly.
It's better than most of what the Jets have.
Exactly. Obviously, I don't think we saw the numbers yet completely up to 15 million. I don't think it's probably going to land somewhere in the 8 to 12 million range.
Yeah, if everything 8 or 9, but it's not going to be 15, basically.
No, if everything goes right, and this will go into the Tyron Smith conversation because I wasn't here for that one either. But if we're paying these guys that much money, good things are happening to this team. So like,
yeah,
we're playing all the games healthy. We're probably winning games playing in the playoffs. I know there's a little bit of an incentive in Tyron's contract. I wonder if they'll do the same for Mike about playoff wins.
Playing time and playoff wins, and
everything works out, we won't mind paying 12, 13, 14, 15 million for Mike Williams.
Yeah, absolutely not. And let's bring our buddy Chris Schubert in, who is ready to roll, and we're going to go ahead and get Chris's thoughts now. Chris,
hello.
Dylan just shared his thoughts. Okay, do what you got to do. Dylan just shared his thoughts on Mike Williams, talked a little about the O-line, and we kind of just, you know, agreed that, and really, Dylan, whether it's whether Garrett Wilson's the one and Williams is the two, which is the way we see it, I don't think we really care. As long as they're both putting up numbers and yards and they're winning, call them the 78. I don't give a damn. So if people want to argue that, oh, Garrett might be the two, I don't care. They're both going to see plenty of targets as long as Rodgers is healthy and running this offense. Chris, how are we doing?
It's been a day, Glenn. It's been a day. That's all I'll say in that capacity.
Glad you were able to get on this quickly. We thought you might be a little bit later, but here you are.
I had to run down to my car to get the cable for my microphone. Hopefully I sound good. It has been a weird, weird day. That is all I will say in that regard. But yeah, listen, this has been a great week for the New York Jets, right? They revamped their offensive line. We talked a little bit about it when Tyron Smith got signed, but then add to it what they did with Mike Williams. And listen, I have been the glass half empty guy on this show, and I can make that case. I can make the case that the 41-year-old quarterback coming off of an Achilles injury, whose last good year was in 2022, I can talk about how you have a left tackle who doesn't stay healthy. You have a left guard who's 26, needs to be coached up by Keith Carter, a center who's in his second year, a right guard who has never finished a season, and Morgan Moses, who is not a young guy in this league. I can talk all that stuff up. And then you add on top of it a wide receiver who does not have a history of finishing seasons. You can talk about all that. But this is where Joe Douglas is going to get to prove us right or wrong, because it is about instilling. You know what Mike Williams' injury profile is. You know what Tyron Smith's injury profile is. You know what Elijah Vera Tucker's injury profile is. If any of those three guys get hurt, that shouldn't be a surprise to you. And so now it is going to be what Joe Douglas chooses to do with whatever cap space remains and with whatever draft capital he has to insulate the New York Jets from those injuries being catastrophic to the 2024 season. That's it. They've done a great job, but they have invested in players who have injury profiles. Make sure you have good quality depth. That's what you have to do.
And this, and I've talked in the past about how, and we've discussed it, how, and this is a great point by you, Chris. I've said before, I don't kill Joe Douglas for a lot of the failures, because a lot of them are sort of injury related that nobody saw coming. Not the case anymore. I mean, I'm not complaining about the signings. I'm just saying he's better. He knows this. It's not like Joe Douglas thinks he's done now. But he's got to keep going, because if these guys get hurt, it's going to be you banked on, and I don't have to repeat it. You just said it, a bunch of guys with injury histories and concerns, and you didn't. But the thing is, you know, like, for example, looking at a guy like Wes Schweitzer, yes, he got hurt last year. Like, what are the odds of like 11 guys getting hurt again? Like, sure, at some point, sure, some of these guys have to stay healthy. If Schweitzer stays healthy, you've already got a middling, even if you want to call below average level, sort of proven center slash guard in him. If you bring McGovern back, you've got the same there. You know, if Carter Warren takes the next step and they feel like he's ready to be the number two behind any of these guys, that's up to them. But there are other guys out there. Looking at Charles Leno the other day, you know, here's a proven starter with Washington, but he had hip surgery, and there were kind of, I went to a Redskins board and they were claiming that there were whispers that this might be a career ender for him. If it's not, and Charles Leno is out there, David Bakhtiari, who I hated the idea of bringing him in, because in my mind, that was going to be as a starter. But if they can say to him, hey, look, dude, you're injured all the time too, but you might be able to do this 5 or 6 games off the bench. Are you happy to come play with your buddy Aaron at a discounted rate on a team that, if you guys do stay healthy, could do something special? So there are other options to bring in veteran tackles, where it doesn't have to be that Carter Warren is the next man up. But if you've got a Bakhtiari or a Leno between Carter Warren and the starters, you've done an okay job at tackle. Like, you, again, you can't bring in 17 guys, but with what you can do, Joe Douglas is definitely rolling the dice here, taking some risks. But I don't hate it, and I think there's more to be done, and he knows that. And there will be one or two picks on the O-line, and we'll probably see one or two more free agents on the O-line.
The other thing I will say too, Glenn, is what they've done, at least in my opinion, is they have eliminated their ability to do exactly what they did in 2023, which is like, oh, poor us. Look at all of these injuries that we have faced. Look at all of these players that have gotten hurt. How could anybody overcome what we've had to overcome in 2023?
They brought in injury-prone guys.
Right. That is not an excuse anymore. You've made it very clear. You believe Tyron Smith is a starting capable left tackle. Well, guess what? If he doesn't play the 4 or 5 games that you need somebody to play, he better be a starting caliber left tackle in his place, because you've chosen to go down this path after what you went through in 2023. Yep. You saw 2023. You saw all 100%. The injuries you have, and you said, you know what? We still believe in our talent evaluation skills, and we're going to continue to evaluate talent and pick players, even if they have injury profiles. We're going to take those players because we believe in the talent. That's fine. You're allowed to stay with that mentality, but you have to fix where you messed up in 2023, and that is with your backup and your depth. So I don't want to hear that the season's lost four plays in next year. I don't want to hear it. I'm sorry. I will not accept that. If Aaron Rodgers, God forbid, it happens again one quarter into the season, that is unacceptable. It is not going to be an acceptable excuse for this team because they've doubled down. But guess what? They've doubled down with good players. Tyron Smith's a good player. Yeah. Morgan Moses, John Simpson, good players. Mike Williams, a good top wide receiver two caliber player. So it's not like they're getting scrubs. They're getting good players, but they've added a risk that they already had last year. So they just have to have good risk management skills and understand how to put together a competent 53-man roster that allows them to be competitive when it matters most, which is when the calendar turns from 2024 to 2025.
Yeah, I think when you look at the offense specifically with this roster, the words boom or bust come to mind. And if everybody's healthy, like I said before in the opening, like, you're not mad that you have to pay Tyron Smith $17 million or Mike Williams $13 million or whatever. But when you look at the offensive line as it's currently constructed, they have nine players on it. Obviously, Tyron Smith, Simpson, Tippmann, Vera Tucker, Moses are your projected starters. Then you have Warren, Schweitzer, Hanson, and Mitchell as your backups. Obviously, we like Schweitzer. We like Warren. We've even said nice things about Jake Hanson on this pod. I would actually like to put a little hot take that Max Mitchell is not going to make the 53 this year. He's probably going to get bumped for a guy like Bakhtiari, but I would add Bakhtiari and a draft pick. Joe Douglas in his last meeting with the media said he's not going to go into the season without 10 offensive linemen. That doesn't mean three Jake Hanson caliber players like the Xavier Newmans of the world. Like, so you're looking at your five starters, Schweitzer. If you bring in a Bakhtiari, let's go re-sign McGovern. That's eight solid players. You know, Carter Warren, he's questionable, but they seem to be high on him. Now you have nine quality players on the offensive line. So, yeah, I think we're not done seeing the moves on the offensive line, but boom or bust comes to mind. And yeah, I think Max Mitchell is probably the odd one out looking at the nine. Your thoughts on the Max Mitchell part? Because I think they need to add tackle still with Tyron Smith. I know there's the joke that Tyron Smith could play the turf games and Bakhtiari can play the grass games and you'd probably get a full left tackle season out of them. But your thoughts on Max Mitchell even making the 53 at this point?
Yeah, I've had that thought that he may not make this team. It wouldn't surprise me one bit. I think, you know, this is the luxury of having, you know, the preseason being a 90-man roster and you can carry guys through the preseason. I think they'll bring him to camp. And if he shows something, maybe he sticks. But, you know, I think he was almost guaranteed a spot last year. That won't be the case this year. I think Hanson, we've said that he showed, you know, he only played a handful of games, four or five games last year, but he had a couple where he looked adequate. He better be the worst lineman on the roster when the season starts. He's got to be the floor and in hoping that he gets better. And if he does, then, you know, again, if Max Mitchell goes, he goes. But I agree. I think we're going to see at least one more free agent and then at least one pick in the draft. And Max Mitchell, I think, could be one of the first guys to go.
Yeah, real quick, I do want to shout out Wild Wave, the $10 super sticker.
Love it.
Thank very you, much Wild appreciated.
Wave. Much appreciated.
Certainly appreciated.
Great. We appreciate
Chris,
that.
Man. Chris, what are your thoughts on Max Mitchell? Because I know we're kind of iffy about him as a collective on the podcast.
Yeah, so look, I think it's really going to depend on what direction they choose to take in the draft, right? And I know that's probably a terrible answer to give on a podcast where I'm supposed to be a hot take machine and give you something like of substance, but like
we don't do hot. We just tell the truth.
Listen, if they take a tackle in the first round, which is still certainly on the table, that tackle is going to be first man up if there's an injury. Like, and so that pushes Max Mitchell further down the board. Now, I told you guys pre-show, we have our group DM that we go through, and I told you guys that I have fallen in love with an idea. And because I've fallen in love with this idea, if the Jets don't do it, I'm going to be very upset. I'm going to tell you about it now because I didn't tell you about it in the pre-show. I have really started to fall in love with the idea of trading back from 10, taking Jordan Morgan late in the first round, and have that be your first man up tackle, and then gain an additional day two pick. And then with either your second or your third, however the board falls out, you get Ricky Pearsall as your wide receiver three for this team. You're telling me that Jordan Morgan, first man up offensive tackle, doesn't have to play right away, can learn from Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses can just sit back and learn. And Ricky Pearsall as the wide receiver three for this football team next to Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams doesn't make the Jets infinitely better. And they add an additional day two pick. Oh, you know what? I'm going to be upset when it doesn't happen because there's nothing else you can convince me that is going to be good for the New York Jets.
So here I come.
That's my answer about what I think about Max Mitchell is I'm planning ways to get him off the team.
Understandable. I'm going to poke holes in your theory. How far are we trading back? That probably determines where I would take Jordan Morgan. And that assumes we're probably getting a second round pick for yes. Ricky Pearsall. Okay. Yes. So we're moving back pretty far. And somebody's coming up for
Morgan. You're talking like mid-20s?
Yeah, I think 25 beyond is probably a nice Morgan landing spot. 25 to 32 okay. is probably a sweet spot for him. And I think if you're going to go from 10 to anywhere from 25 to 32, you can ask for a second round pick. I'm going down 15 spot.
Second, yeah.
So yeah. like it feels like the perfect way for you to potentially recoup a second round pick. Now listen, they might just stay and pick Brock Bowers or Fuago or one of the seven players that we love for them in that spot. And that's fine. I'm not going to be super upset about it. But just the idea of they don't have a second round pick, and I really want to get a second round pick. Like in this draft class in particular, I want my hands on a second round pick.
Yeah, I'm so on board with the second that I think that's part of the reason I was not all that upset when I came to the conclusion before the Chargers gutted their wide receiver depth chart. I was like, you know what? The Chargers are going to take Bowers and I'm fine with that because I want the Jets to move down to 15, 16, 17 and get that second. You got to get a second rounder. But if that's not going to happen or, you know, if they're going to stick a 10 and pick a tackle or Bowers or whatever, it's going to sting not having a two. And again, that's what, again, because of the depth in this class, we've talked about it. That's why I'd be okay with using next year's picks to get into it. Because I think there's a good chance you'll get a better player at 25 this year than you will at, you know, hopefully the mid to late 20s next year. So you're getting a better player. You're getting him a year earlier to play with Rodgers. There's a lot of different ways, but I wouldn't be upset about that one bit. I've been a big Pearsall guy for a couple of years now.
Oh, man.
And all he did at the Senior Bowl was sort of solidify everything I already thought about him. I think he's going to be a fantastic, even like I like Roman Wilson a lot, but I prefer Pearsall to him. I'd be happy with either one as a mid second round type guy. But Pearsall, there's just so many receivers in this class that, you know, I saw a tweet today, you know, but Adonai Mitchell is now a first round talent and Xavier Worthy might go in the first round. And like how many, I say this every year, if you took all the tweets and put them together, you'd have 300 guys who are going to sneak into the first round. Right. And I've seen people say Ricky Pearsall could go back in the first round. And any
no,
of these guys
no, no,
could.
No.
It just depends on what a team is looking for. There might be a team that looks at him and says, you know what? For what we want, we would prefer him to some of these other guys.
Have I shared my comp for Ricky Pearsall, at least publicly? I know I might have shared it privately with some of you guys. I think if you like Alec Pierce from the Indianapolis Colts, you're getting a better version of Alec Pierce and Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah, he's been kind of a bust, hasn't he? Has he done anything out there?
Listen, he hasn't been great. Quarterback. Listen, again, if you like the profile of Alec Pierce coming out of college, then I think you should be all in on Ricky Pearsall because I think he's a better version of that.
And I think just to piggyback on the whole trading scenarios, you talked about it like you would rather have a second round pick this year as opposed to next year. You also would rather have a third and a fourth round pick as opposed to many day three picks.
Yes.
I know there's a lot of teams that are currently trying to trade out of day three, get up into day two, and even, you know, I wouldn't want to say overpaying to do that, but I could see a scenario where teams are rapidly trying to get back up into day two with their day three capital this year because they've talked about how much of a smaller draft pool it is. NIL obviously affecting that, juniors going back to school who would make more in their last year of college than they would coming out as a sixth, seventh round pick. So definitely weighs all into it, but I definitely think I don't hate that idea, Chris. I don't love the two players you specifically put in that scenario, but that's neither here nor there because you could swap out any other tackle and any other wide receiver and still make it a good conversation piece. But yeah, I think trading up and trading back should both be in the cards for Joe Douglas this draft. Maybe not so much trading up in round one, but trading up in round three, four.
Do you think we should spend our entire time with Zach just shouting random trade possibilities at him and having him grade them like 1 through 10? Like that'd be
no,
good.
We,
I think
we should just get a stack of mock drafts and have him grade those.
His sucks.
Don't listen to him. Mine's better.
I think he'd love that. I think that would make him happy.
Oh yeah, he'd want to come on every week.
Now we could talk to him about Jordan Morgan because he's a U of A guy.
Oh okay.
Now, that's a battle between Zach and I, because I'm an ASU guy, he's a U of A guy, and that's fine. Right. We don't have to bring that up. But
is it my imagination, or did I see someone tweet just the other day, and I like Jordan Morgan, but I feel like I saw someone tweet the other day that he measured, his arms are really short. And they were nobody with arms that length has made a Pro Bowl this millennium or whatever. Which part of that, too, is guys with arms that short don't get a chance because they get pigeonholed into guard. Doesn't mean he can't do it.
I mean, you know where I'm going. I'm going to go to our favorite website, Mock Draftable, and I'm going to look him up here.
I think someone said he had shorter than 33-inch arms or something.
I'm getting the wrong Jordan Morgan when I look him up.
No, I think it was Patrick Paul. I'm thinking of late round tackles. Okay. I think Patrick Paul had the shorter arms, not Jordan Morgan.
His arm length is 9th percentile, so it's not great. Ninth percentile arm length. But his comparables are Ryan Ramczyk. You got Lyle Collins in here. You got Nick Saldiveri, Tyler Steen. These are not terrible comps.
Yeah, these aren't.
Steen moved to guard, but those are good players. Definitely good players. All right, we have a question from Wild Wave. Would you guys do this trade? The Jets give up 10 overall. I guess this is probably in accordance to Daniel Jeremiah's 3.0 mock that had the Jets taking Marvin Harrison Jr. with the 5th overall pick. But the Jets trade 10, 72, and next year's 1 to the Chargers for 5 and 37.
That's too much for me.
Why would the Chargers do that? Five and 20 and 37 to basically just gain an additional first. They drop in the first round, and then they drop from 37 to 72. The Chargers would never go for that, but sure.
To be fair, they're not dropping a ton. If they feel like they can get a guy they like at 10 and add a one next year, I think Jeremiah had 10 for 5 with the Jets throwing in next year too. I think if you gave him a 1.
Yeah, I didn't
do that.
I was going to say, I didn't know exactly what Daniel's trade compensation.
Yeah, and I read it wrong. I thought he said it first, and I was like, I'm not giving up a 1 to move up 5 spots. And that's how I feel. I think if you can move up to 5, and Abby says, who are you taking? You're taking Marvin Harrison. I'm taking Harrison.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is not going to be there at 5.
Arizona
Cardinals have made it abundantly clear. Like, the only way you can when you have the number 4 pick, they've made it abundantly clear that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be their selection. Like it's the most obvious thing of all time.
I think, do you think, because this was my first thought when they made the trade, I think 4 is where the Vikings are going to target to use those 2 first rounders to trade up and take a quarterback.
I think they're going to try to get in there.
Because they can't wait till 6 because the Giants might take one.
I was going to say, they end up getting into like 5 or 6. I don't know. If Chris says that they're serious about Marvin Harrison, I mean, if they're not going to move off the pick, then maybe they don't entertain any offers. But I just assumed Monty Austin Fort would want to continue gaining more picks for that organization.
He has two firsts this year. So,
right. But the Vikings, I mean, they're the team at this point
they
that all eyes are on.
And they just added a second first.
It's
and
no secret that they're doing all this to gain
so
a quarterback.
They're doing what the Bills did with Josh Allen, right? Accumulate first-round picks and try to move up.
Maybe the Titans at 7?
But hold on, guys, because I think we're missing a very important part of this conversation. They're moving up to where to take who? Because if they want to go up to 4, they're taking QB4 at 4? Yeah. Like, they have to like
it's
QB4.
It's either that or Sam Darnold.
But they have to like the guy that is QB4. Now, it can happen. It happened with Josh Allen, right? Josh Allen was not the first or second quarterback taken off the board.
I keep hearing people say J.J. McCarthy, and that's why might try to jump the Giants.
I think that'd be the consensus QB4 if that is the scenario. But yeah, like you said, they would have to be okay with that option. And I know the Jets did that ahead of the draft. They did the whole move from 6 to 3 thing, and that was assumed that they were going to probably get the 3rd best quarterback. Obviously, then Saquon goes to the Giants, and the Jets breathe a sigh of relief and get the quarterback one in their eyes the whole time.
I remember I had a former scout on after that trade, and he said there's no way in the world the Jets made that trade that early without rock solid intel that the Giants were not taking a quarterback, that they were taking Saquon.
Yeah, but years later, they knew that Baker was going to be the pick.
They still made the deal because they thought the Jets knew it was Saquon to the Giants and one of their quarterback. Again, they were hoping it would be Baker.
Yeah.
That's who they thought would be there. As it turned out, it was Darnold. And, you know,
and Gettleman didn't even answer the phone when they were on the clock at 2, according to most stories.
Yeah, that Connor Hughes brought that story up. But or there's a scenario where you make that trade up because you like multiple quarterbacks.
Right. That's what I said at the time. When the Jets made that trade and the number of people who were like, they're going to get QB3. And I say it all the time. And it happens this year. People get so caught up in where the guy is ranked within that class. I don't care. Did you evaluate this player and do you feel that there are three quarterbacks worth that you would happily take in that spot that you think you could win with? If there are, it doesn't matter which one it is. If you need a quarterback and you think we believe we can with any of those three, then make the trade. It's not like, right. Oh, but we're getting the third best guy. What if it was the 83 draft? What are you like? Oh, man, we're getting Jim Kelly because all these other guys went ahead of him. Like, if they're all timers and they're going to fall, get them. Don't worry.
Sure.
Well, we would take this guy, but he's the third best guy in this class, so we don't want him. That's so dumb.
If you have three top 10 grades on quarterbacks, then you don't really care which quarterback you get. You don't.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. Yeah.
Like, if you have two top 10 grades on a quarterback, then you have to get into the top two. You have to insulate yourself and protect yourself from what could potentially happen. And so for me, I think it's very telling that the Vikings have acquired an additional first round pick, but they haven't done anything with it yet. They're just holding on to it because they have decided yet, I think, where they need to get to.
They might just be saying, look, we'll wait till draft day. If our guy falls to 3, 4, 5, we'll try to move up. And if not, we've got two ones.
It's going to be interesting. I don't think it's going to be four quarterbacks in a row. So I do think that somewhere we're going to get back to what the mock draft said a couple months ago. Right. Yeah. Unless something happens pre-draft, it's so hard to, you know, when teams are on the clock in the moment, picking at 3, 4, 5, like they are entertaining calls. Yes. But you have to think that they need to be blown away. We always hear about how organizations want to absolutely win a trade and they're not willing to, you know, look like they lost a trade. So on draft night, they're specifically not going to do that. By the trade down offer, they're probably not going to take it to begin with. So it's going to be interesting to see when it happens, but I think three quarterbacks in a row, four is a stretch.
All right. Absolutely. Coming in to join us now, we've got Zach Rosenblatt from The Athletic. Talk a little bit about the Jets offseason so far, where he thinks they might be headed, maybe a little draft. Zach, how are we doing tonight?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Thanks Good. For thanks for calling in. Thanks for joining us. Right off the bat, why don't we start with any developments, any news? We know that today Jadeveon Clowney, who must at this point have the NFL all-time record for consecutive one-year deals, in the building at One Jets Drive. Jets have interest. There is an obvious fit there. How do you think this is looking?
Yeah, I mean, it clearly wasn't we're not going to let him leave the building situation like it was with Mike Williams. Although I did see that a lot of people sent some food to the facility. I don't think it was as successful this time. I had a feeling that was going to happen. But if you look at when Jadeveon Clowney signed over his last like 4 1-year deals, it's been pretty late in the process usually. I think usually like April or sometimes even right before the season. So I think he'll take his time. He'll try to wait for a market to materialize. He's coming off arguably his best year if you look at statistically pass rushing. I'm sure there's some context to that with the Ravens and how they do things. But I think he's going to take his time, and I don't know how much he's asking for. I don't think the Jets are going to pay a lot for an edge rusher that won't even be a starter on their team necessarily. So I'm not really sure like how much they're dying to like pay him a lot. But if they were to sign him, it would be another incentive laden type thing like they're doing with a lot of these guys. So there's definitely interest there, but I don't know if it's going to happen like right now.
Zach, speaking of interest, not a lot at the moment in Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Jets are probably – they're just going to – they may end up cutting him outright, which is what some people have speculated. What do you think happens there? And one thing I wanted to touch base on, I know it's sort of – it is water under the bridge, but it's a thing we've talked about so many times on this show, and you mentioned it in a recent article, and I thought, oh, there's that thing that I've speculated on a million times. With the way things unfolded last year, it was so nonsensical to say we need to replace Zach – we're going to go jump through all these hoops to bring in a Hall of Famer and then put ourselves in a position where Zach is one snap away. Turned out he was 4 snaps away. And it drove me nuts for so long, and I badmouthed him so long for it. I eventually got to the point where I thought, I think this came from upstairs. I think they said, look, we just spent all this money and picks on Aaron. We owe Zach 10 a year. We're not giving you, Joe Douglas, another 8, 9, 10, 11 million to sign a backup. And you suggested that in a recent story. Is that something that you're hearing? Or is that again speculation on your part? Because again, leaving the season up to Zach Wilson was really gross mismanagement of the team, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you know, I do think they didn't want to pay three quarterbacks like big money. I don't think you necessarily had to pay another quarterback big money. Like if you, I forget what Gardner Minshew signed for with the Colts. It was something like $2.5 million. It was like pretty small. But ultimately, like, I don't think either way, I don't think they were going to go into the season signing another veteran. I thought they felt okay with like risking it with Zach. They didn't think the worst case scenario would happen where four plays in, they have to deal with it. I think the bigger mistake they made was not adding one after Aaron went down. They kind of rolled with it for a little while. It clearly was a mistake. Eventually got Trevor Siemian. That's not really quite enough. And you saw some backups doing a lot better around the league, obviously. So, you know, the way they handled it, I mean, it's been well covered at this point. But, you know, they kind of threw their hands up when they lost Aaron. And they paid the price for it. And now, you know, they're trying to protect themselves way better this year. As, you know, they invested in Tyrod Taylor for 2 years. They're building the offensive line. They're getting more weapons. So they're trying to better prepare in case the worst case scenario happens this time, but because they were not ready for that last year.
Zach, it's been some big splashes over the last week or so for this team. Tyron Smith, Mike Williams just this week. Do you think moving forward for Joe, he's going to continue to be as aggressive as we've seen from him over the last week? Or do you think he's going to take more of a wait and see approach to fill out some of the depth on this roster?
I think the aggression is going to be kind of similar. It's kind of like, they'll be willing to be aggressive with the guys if it's at their price. That's kind of like what they've – like Tyron Smith, I'll say this again, and I'm not the only one who said it. Like they did not expect him to accept that offer. Like right. That was not like the expectation that they offered him it. The offer was there. I think he explored his market. I don't think he got the interest that he thought he was going to get. Like, because if he did, you don't accept a deal that's almost entirely incentive-based like his was, playing time. So he pretty much has to play in order to earn the full money. And if he plays and earns the full money, then the Jets win anyway, because then they have Tyron Smith for however many games. So my point being, like, it's going to be like at their price if they're going to shop for a guy like a Clowney, or whether it's they go and get another receiver or whatever it is. I don't think they're going to make a huge splash like they did with these two guys. But, you know, if a guy's market is below what Joe Douglas thought, he's going to try and capitalize on that.
Are you surprised at how committed Joe has been to his strategy? Because I think going into the offseason, we talked about on this show quite a bit that they had a lot to get, right? 3.5 offensive linemen, 3 starters, probably a backup for Elijah Vera Tucker. They needed to get a wide receiver too. They needed to get a quarterback. And that didn't seem to fit with the way Joe Douglas operates in free agency. Yeah. He, like you said, waits for the market to come to him. If you exceed his price, he's out. He's going to move to his next guy on his list. Are you surprised that he's been able to pull off what he's been able to pull off in this short amount of time?
I wouldn't necessarily say surprised as much as I'm surprised that like both of the things happened instead of like just one, like Mike Williams and Tyron Smith working out. Like I did not expect that, I would say. But them getting both, like, I mean, he absolutely deserves credit. Look, there's a reason these guys are available. There's a reason why he's getting them at the contract is because they have a lot of injury questions. One coming off ACL, the other has missed 37 games in 4 years. So like there's risk involved, but like it's a risk that the Jets can and needed to take. And you can't blame the process here. If it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. But like these were the best possible options on a team that needed these two things more than any position. So, yeah, you know, I'm not necessarily surprised about how it went, other than like the fact that they were able to get both of these guys, and they were both definitely nearer at the top of their board when they went into the offseason.
So we talked about Jadeveon Clowney, and there's the rumors that we could be flirting with Ezekiel Elliott again. Are there any other rumblings of any, star names that are, you know, linked to the Jets right now? I know safety could be another potential position they're looking at. Justin Simmons is floated out there. So are there any other rumblings of a potential big name free agent at any of those positions, edge, running back, or safety?
No, I think right now Clowney, I would say, is the focus. And again, I think now you're going to see where Joe does kind of wait it out and sees what guys are going to willing to accept smaller. I don't see Justin Simmons coming to the Jets. I think Joe just in general does not really invest in the safety position. And I don't think you'll see him do that again. I think they do need to get a third one, whether that's bringing back Ashton Davis or going and getting somebody else. But yeah, you know, I look at safety. I look at backup running back. You mentioned Zeke. I know last year they were not interested in him. There was like reports that they were. They were not last year. I think he was pretty solid for the Patriots. I think he's honestly a pretty good compliment for Breece Hall in terms of just being like a power guy. You can catch the ball out of the backfield pretty good at pass protection. So out of the guys that are left, because Deontay Foreman was the one I had my eye on, I thought he was someone that made a lot of sense. But so Zeke is an interesting one. But I think, again, I think he'll wait it out. They didn't sign Dalvin Cook until August. Remember last year, they overpaid him, obviously, but they waited for that. Some other guys might break free. They see how the draft plays out, that kind of thing. Like, I don't think they're going to be, like, aggressive. If they're going to be aggressive for any position, I would say swing tackle would be the one I would do. There's a few intriguing veterans still out there. And they really need an insurance plan in case Tyron Smith can't get – you have to assume he's not going to make it through the season. So they need a better backup plan than Carter Warren, as much as they like them. I don't think you can go into the season with him as your third tackle.
Yeah, I know you mentioned recently that the team is a lot higher on Warren than some fans are. But in terms of young guys who they might who we're not talking about, you guys talking about the safety position got me wondering – we saw what happened with Tony Adams last year from UDFA. Yeah. Guy didn't see the field much. He ends up being a starter. What are their feelings? Are they looking at a guy like Jarek Bernard-Converse? Not necessarily as a starter, but do they feel like that he is a late-round guy, can he be a contributor this year? And is that why – I mean, obviously, we still have a lot of offseason to go, but they're not being aggressive with safety. And I don't think anyone expected them to be, because, as you said, it's not somewhere Joe Douglas has been. But Bernard-Converse is a guy who – I thought he looked all right as a corner in college. Of course, he played corner and safety. And depending on which website, which beat writer you were listening to, I heard him referred to as a corner and a safety multiple times last year. Where do you think they envision him?
Yeah, I think they probably envision him as a safety, but his ability to play both is useful. It was kind of a redshirt year for him last year. He didn't even practice at all in training camp. They activated him later. He played some special teams. I don't know if he really got it on defense, maybe like a couple snaps here and there. So I think he's kind of – you know, they love his traits. He's very athletic. He had, like, great testing numbers coming out of the draft. I think that's why they wanted him late in the draft. He's kind of one that, like, you see in training camp what you have. And, you know, and if you like what you see, then you might have something there. But I think they got to bring in a veteran or draft somebody else at least to push him. And, you know, even if he's the fourth safety, I think you're okay with that if he has some talent.
Can I just say how nice this is to not be talking about VP picks and we can talk about actual football players being assigned to a team? Like, this is great. Yeah. This is fantastic. Last week, we were sitting here talking about Aaron Rodgers potentially being a vice presidential candidate. Now we got Tyron Smith and Mike Williams. Sorry, I totally derailed us there, but it's just nice to talk actual football for a change with this team.
I mean, he derailed us when he made us have to talk about that. So, you know, right. You paid him back there.
Yeah, it's fair enough. So, Zach, I think for a lot of fans, the approach that this team has taken has been a surprise, right? We mentioned a little bit earlier, you said getting both Tyron Smith and Mike Williams was the surprise. Getting one of them, maybe not so much, but getting both of them. I think a lot of fans look at that and say, okay, this is exactly what kind of happened in 2023. You have a lot of players who are older, who have injury profiles. What are you going to do in order to not allow that to derail your season? Because I think I speak for the three guys on the show. I speak for the listeners who go, we're not going to get two games into the season next year and accept, oh, you know, injuries got us. What can you expect us to do? You know, oh, we'll just try again next year. You saw what happened in 2023. You've doubled down in a way with good players, but you've doubled down in a way with players who have that injury profile. So how does Joe do this? Is he going to invest? They don't have a lot of draft capital, but do you see the draft class kind of filling out those needs of a backup tackle, the next man up at the wide receiver position, some safety depth, because they are one injury away in certain areas of being very similar to where they were in 2023.
Yeah. I do think the draft is kind of, I think that's kind of the idea going into, like, I was curious to see how the free agency would play out because it was going to kind of dictate how obvious what their target was going to be in the draft. I didn't expect them to fill out the offensive line and the receiver. I mean, I think you could argue they need another receiver pretty badly, but like in terms of like just the pure starters, like in, if you want to talk like 11 personnel or whatever, like the two receivers and the five offensive linemen, like I didn't necessarily expect all of that to be filled out this far in advance of the draft. So I think now you have the ability to, if you stay there at 10, you have the ability to get that tackle that is good enough to start on most teams. But won't have to on the Jets, and you can learn from Tyron Smith, or you have the ability to draft one of the receivers or Brock Bowers to kind of fill, you know, some that void that would happen if hypothetically Mike Williams gets hurt or if Tyron Smith gets hurt. So I do think the draft is going to be kind of where they get their insurance policies. I think ideally you want somebody who can help you like right now, which is why I'm not as confident that they'll draft an offensive lineman. I'm not going to rule it out. Like if Joe Alt's there, I'm not going to turn that down. If they really like Talisi Fuaga, they'll take him, but I'd aim for this receiver class because I think it's absolutely loaded. Even maybe even the third round, because I think you could probably get a really good guy in the third round. But if one of those top three guys falls to 10 somehow, I'd pounce on that.
So as the resident dreamer of the Jet Nation podcast, with the signing of Mike Williams, is it dead that Devontae Adams is getting traded to the Jets? Because I've been clinging to that one for quite a while.
Dylan, you're going to keep doing this?
It's been dead for a while. Maybe if it's a disaster in Vegas this year or something, then you can have some hope again. But yeah, that's not happening.
So, Zach, last year, I think a lot of us were confused. I don't want to say frustrated because I think that's a little unfair. Confused by the Will McDonald pick. That it felt like a luxury that the team couldn't really afford. And now we come into this year and they have the 10th overall pick. And I speak for myself, but I think there are some Jets fans out there that feel the same way of like, this is kind of who Joe is. Like, he takes a player if he likes him, best player available, doesn't matter the position. Like, he's going to take a guy, and if it's a player that's going to sit, like, it's okay. Do you think that's the way he's going to approach having a top 10 pick again? Or has he, I don't want to say learn, because I know that's his philosophy, but is he going to adjust and potentially take a different approach?
I have thought about that as I've been writing. Like, they have the ability to take the best player available. In my head, I'm like, that also that doesn't just mean an offense anymore.
Jared Verse, Dallas Turner, come on down.
I don't think that's going to happen. But you honestly, you can't rule it out with Joe. And if they don't feel Will McDonald's ready, and you know they don't get Jadeveon Clowney or something, like, I don't know. I can't completely rule it out. I wouldn't say they're going to do that. I'm pretty confident they won't. They know the offense is where they need to add stuff, but you can never rule out Joe Douglas getting one of those big dudes up front.
I could not imagine the fan reaction if Joe Douglas took a defensive lineman with the 10th pick.
I can because it would be how they reacted last year with McDonald, which is very angry. So.
Chris used the right word. You know, Dylan and I were live for that, and we both just froze for a couple seconds. Like, we didn't.
Especially because Will was, you know, and I think Will does have talent for what it's worth. But like, he was like a very out of left field pick, because I don't think any of us were, like, not just not only not projecting, position, yeah, but the ranking,
the player,
I think the criticism's warranted on that. I think the Jets know it now. I think they put the cart before the horse a little bit last year, because their whole thought process was, well, we're going to have a lot of leads. So when we have a lot of leads, we're going to rush the passer more. And so we're going to need Will in those situations. And then they obviously didn't have a lot of leads. So it was a luxury pick when, you know, they didn't value those receivers as first round picks. And that is what has aged very poorly, because three guys that were drafted right after, as you know, would have been absolute studs on the Jets, number twos. I mean, maybe they would have had a hard time having a quarterback get to the ball, but You look now, then they wouldn't have hypothetically had to spend as much as they did on Mike Williams. So I think that was a mistake. Like, you see where Joe's head was at, and Will McDonald might wind up being a very good player, but like at the time, it was not the right pick.
Yeah, I think the point you made a few minutes ago is kind of what I've been saying since they've made these changes after the Tyron Smith move. I felt like, and I keep saying it, and listen, no one's going to agree on everything, but I would say, no, I wouldn't rule out O-line, but I'm 90% sure this has to be a guy on offense who contributes now. They can't have a guy who, like, well, we might need this guy in week 13, or we might need this guy in week 10. And yeah, maybe you will, but, you know, there are some other veterans out there who you can get. You know, again, we mentioned Carter Warren. Like, do they believe he can be a backup, whatever it may be? But if it's an offensive player, just from what you've seen, which pass catcher would you take, and why is it Brock Bowers?
Well, it's all scenario based, obviously. Like, if those three receivers, you know, Rome and Malik Nabers and obviously Marvin Harrison are all gone, then Brock Bowers absolutely, I think, would be my at the top of my board. And then Brian Thomas, it might be a little high at 10, but like, if you're really high on them, then you take the guy that you think is going to help you right away. So this is a very good receiver class. So if those three guys are gone, and Brock Bowers is either gone or you don't want to pick a tight end, I think trading back makes a lot of sense. If a team has to be willing to trade up, obviously. If all the quarterbacks are gone, then maybe there won't be a team willing to trade up, which I think is maybe what they ran into last year with the Will McDonald pick. There wasn't maybe any teams that were willing to trade up, but I would trade back if those guys aren't there. But yeah, I think Brock Bowers makes so much sense, because he's more than just a tight end. He can pretty much be your third wide receiver / number one or number two tight end. You have Tyler Conklin still. I think those two guys complement each other in a fun way. You have Jeremy Rucker. He's a good blocker. So that'd be like the most exciting in terms of like just loading up the top of the depth chart on the offense. And not many teams could like throw out what the Jets are going to be able to throw out. So yeah, I think that's going to be, that's like the, wide receiver, tight end is always like the sexy pick in the draft because the fans always want the pass catcher. And you're like, okay, we got an offensive lineman. I guess I'm excited about that. But like a receiver, like whatever it is, because they're the ones catching the ball and scoring touchdowns. And you got Garrett Wilson doing what he does. So I get it. And I would pick him if I was them, but I also can't blame them if they picked an offensive lineman.
Yeah. So Zach, let me just let Zach in on a little secret here. So Glenn, you just used you with that question because he and I have
I didn't know such thing. Zach gave his own answer.
No, see, this is what happened. Glenn and I disagree on if Bauer should be the pick, and this has been dating back for like months. And so you're on the show, so we use that to get.
I wanted Bauer to be the pick 3 years ago.
Right. I will say just to play devil's advocate, someone at the Athletic, his name's Austin Mock. He does analytics for us. He did like in terms of like value. It doesn't make a lot of sense to draft a tight end in the top 10 just because of how much money you're going to have to pay them a few years down the line. Like, that's really thinking far down the line, but
you shouldn't have drafted Breece Hall, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's more, you take the best player.
So, yeah, I understand there are arguments against it, but none
yeah.
are good.
No, enough. I agree. I would pick him. Everything I hear is that he's an absolute stud, so.
Well, what helps too, Zach, I think has to be that like they've addressed everything else major, right? And so you now have that luxury. I think if we walked into draft night and we didn't know who the starting left tackle was and they run in the card that says Brock Bowers,
that was a funny thing. Cause I think Dane Brugler at his like first team mock drafts, like a month ago and before that had Brock Bowers as the Jets pick and fans were like mad at the time because like, if they pick a tight end, we're going to lose our mind. Well, cause they had no idea what was coming in the offseason. Where they get Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses and all that stuff. So it's all context, like you said. So it's they've addressed some things. Like there's still a lot of questions. You know, Mike Williams and Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses are all in one-year deals. So that's also a factor. But you also have a coaching staff and GM on the hot seat. So, like, do they care about drafting for the future or drafting for right now? Exactly. That'll be what we're going to find out.
So you mentioned something there, and I wasn't going to bring it up, but you said it there, so I am going to ask. Do you think – one of Douglas or Saleh is more on the hot seat than the other? Because we've had this debate on this show of Joe Douglas's body of work isn't as bad as it looks. Injuries kind of derailed some of the signings and it just didn't work out. Where with Saleh, it feels like there are a lot of things that he's directly involved in that you can say he has failed at. And now with this offseason, a lot of people I think are looking at it being like, wow, Joe did it once again and he's going to have a top 10 pick and he's been really good at that. Do you think truly that it is a mandate for both of those guys entering the season, or did Joe maybe buy himself a little wiggle room?
I do think it's for both of them, especially because, you know, Joe has went and spent a lot of Woody Johnson's money these last couple of years. And if it doesn't work out, then I think Woody is going to take that to heart. But I do think if I'm going to say who's on the more on the hot seat, I think it is Robert, especially because the on-field results, you know, they haven't, as Joe Douglas said in his end of season press conference, they haven't handled adversity particularly well these last couple of years when guys have gone down. And you know, I think Robert has done a good job of like keeping the locker room together, but there's also a risk of like, if it gets worse and worse and that it becomes harder to hold together. And if you lose the locker room, then you're toast. Woody Johnson's never fired a coach in season, which is pretty crazy considering the Jets history, but he's never fired one in season. So it'd have to be a pretty big disaster for that to happen. But like, if we're talking who's more likely to fire sooner, it would be Robert. I think at the end of the season, if they miss the playoffs and things are bad, they're probably both gone. Maybe Joe is slightly more likely to be safe, but yeah, I think Robert is more on the hot seat.
Just going back to the top offensive tackles in this class, because that they're obviously all in the realm of possibility at 10, despite having projected starters. I believe during the Senior Bowl, the Jets were reported to be eyeing Fuaga from Oregon State, but did they do any extensive homework? Obviously, we know that there's interest in all these tackles, but have you heard any specific interest in the Alts or Fashanus, Fatanus, any of those tackles that aren't Fuaga at the top of the draft?
Not necessarily, because I think they're doing the work on all of those guys for sure. They're putting, like, especially the ones that are considered top 10 prospects, like a Joe Alt, like a Fashanu, like Fuaga. A lot of it is so based on like how the draft plays out. It's so hard to predict. Joe Douglas is going to do his work on offensive linemen. Absolutely. I mean, the scouts are doing their work on that. I've seen that they've been hitting all the major pro days with all these guys. I think Alabama had their pro. Yeah. Today, I think the Jets are there. They're at the Georgia one with Amarius Mims. So they've seen like all those guys, and they have, I think Keith Carter's been doing the pro day circuit. So, they're putting in the work. Again, Joe Alt's the most intriguing one to me if he were to fall to 10 somehow. because it's hard to turn down a guy like that. He's such a freak. And I think being able to develop him for a little bit, even if he doesn't have to play right away, is very tempting. But yeah, Brock Bowers over Joe Alt.
Oh, Glenn. I mean, that's, there you go. That was for you. That was for you.
Thank you, Zach. Thank you.
That was so much for you. That was.
And thank you, Zach, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Wait, can I ask Zach one? I have one question for Zach.
Go ahead.
It's very important. It has nothing to do with football. Zach.
All right, let's do it.
Your University of Arizona Wildcat basketball team.
Here it is.
Is this the year?
This right here is the McHale Center.
As an ASU fan, I'm very, and as an ASU alum, I'm very familiar. So trust me, there's no love lost between the two of us.
Yeah. I would say right now I do not have much confidence. I believe that Tommy Lloyd can lead this team far when he actually does it. They've been so disappointing, and they did not end the season well. They had a couple of bad losses at the end, got eliminated early at Pac-12 tournament. So I'm not very confident, I would say, but maybe not being confident is the key to them being good. I just got a new Arizona hat just came in the mail today. I'm hoping that I get to put it to good use and don't lose in the first round to Princeton like they did a couple years ago.
Well, it's Long Beach State, right, this week? So
It is. So Long Beach State, who fired their coach but let him stay on, and then they made the tournament, which is like wild. Yeah.
Yeah. Wild story. Sorry, Glenn. I just had to get some UVA basketball
Quite all right. Again, Zach Rosenblatt from The Athletic joining us to talk Jets, talk draft, talk Joe Douglas, and of course, Brock Bowers. Thanks so much for coming on, Zach. We'll hopefully have you on again during the season.
Yeah, definitely. Great talking to you guys.
All right. Take care, Zach. All right. So that's Zach Rosenblatt from The Athletic. And Brock Bowers is the pick. I don't really think there's anything else left to say.
Dylan, I'm not going to allow this to stand. Because clearly what happened here is Glenn was the one who set up the interview. And he was messaging back and forth with Zach. And that's 100% a setup. You told Zach ahead of time, I'm a huge Bowers fan. Could you have my back?
Like wild wave.
Right.
And I was like, listen, here's some of the things we need to talk about, Zach.
Right. Let's and Zach obliged because Zach's a good sport. No, listen, Zach was great.
We've got some guests lined up. You're going to notice a trend when I ask that question.
Right. And if we do, I just want the listeners that are paying attention in the chat, pay attention to this. I appreciate Zach's insight because, I mean, he's talking to people in the building. He's covering the team every day. And it's... Honestly, for the three of us, we're looking at it from an outsider's perspective. But when we're asking questions and he's nodding along like, yep, I've thought of that too. Like, yep, trust me, that's a thought that I've had. Like, it is nice to know that, like, the people who cover this team are looking at this and being like, yeah, where's the depth? Like, where's that coming in? Yeah. Okay, they've now got all these options with number 10. So it was good to get his insight. And I guess for you, Glenn, it's Brock Bowers over Joe Alt, which was tough.
Yeah, listen, my gut still says they trade down. Dream World, let's trade down to 13 and get Bowers and add a pick somewhere. But, you know,
Malik Nabers is 100% a Charger, right? Like, that's the lock of all locks.
Got it.
Like,
it's trending.
Like I said,
I had them
locked in at Bowers till they dumped their receivers. And it's like, well, now it's got to be.
Well,
Nabers.
Remember,
I'd take Nabers over a dude.
Remember, I raise my hand up all the time when I do this, but I was the guy on this show when somebody said, oh, just go trade for Keenan Allen. I said, they're not going to trade Keenan Allen. They just got rid of Mike Williams. Why are you trading for Keenan Allen? Literally days later, they traded him for like a fourth round pick. Like, I don't know what Jim Harbaugh's. John's in Baltimore. Don't know what Jim Harbaugh's doing. I really don't.
They said they want to run the ball. So, I mean,
Austin Eckler.
All right, so who's the top running back on everybody's board?
Bijan Robinson in this class.
Jonathan,
like,
you're not taking Trey Benson at five.
Trey Benson, right. That's another
Braylon
good name.
Allen.
Yeah, the Wisconsin back, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I do like both those guys, but neither one of them going in the first round, let alone fifth.
So you
got to think O-line.
Yeah, so predictively, Chris, you're saying three quarterbacks and then Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers. That's rounding out your top five right now?
Yeah, sounds
well.
Like,
listen,
yeah.
I don't want to tell tales out of school, but I was the person on this show who had JJ McCarthy to the Giants before anybody else did. So I've been pretty in on this that JJ is going to be the pick at six. Not because I know anything, but just that's what I think is going to happen. And so I'm going to stay true to that because there's nothing that's going to delineate from that. So I think right now it would be Caleb, Jaden Daniels, and I guess the question you have to ask yourself is how does New England feel about Drake May? I think that's really the question you have to ask yourself because Drake May feels like the most polarizing quarterback prospect of all time. I have him as QB1. Other people have him as QB4. Other people say you can't take him in the first round. It's all over the place. I love him too. I think he's QB1. So
somebody, our friend Rich from North Carolina, who I've had the opportunity to meet a couple times, really good guy, known him for years from the Jet Nation, from the message boards. he's every now and then he peppers me with a scenario where the Jets end up with Drake May. And I just keep saying they can't take a backup, especially can't take Aaron's backup at 10. He messaged me a little while
Wait
ago.
Wait a minute.
Tweeted me a little while ago. Is this about the what's his name?
I was just going to say I'm in. I think I'm in.
Oh, well, listen, I wouldn't dislike it. I just don't see it. I don't see any chance of it. But he said that Albert Breer was a guest. This according to Rich. Albert Breer was on Rich Eisen earlier, and he said he could envision a scenario where the Jets trade up, not for Marvin Harrison, but for Drake May. I would be shocked. I think Aaron Rodgers would be pissed. I think he'd be like, are we trying to win this thing, or are you guys looking down the road? Like, I'm a year-to-year guy, and we need pieces, and you just drafted a guy who is going to be behind me, and I don't have another guy to – we could have had Brock Bowers, we could have had Neighbors, could have had Odunze, could have had any of these guys for me to work with, and now I've got – you know, I don't have that, and you're drafting my back. I can't envision a scenario where the Jets say, this is a win-now year, or we all get fired, but you know what? Let's hey, listen, I was in the Boy Scouts. Let's do the right thing and draft good players for the next regime. I can't see that happening.
Yeah, before I let you go, Chris, I think that would be, you know, obviously the biggest thing that came to my mind is that the last time that somebody did that to Aaron Rodgers, he won two MVPs. But Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh are not drafting a quarterback for somebody else to use
exactly
with the Jets. Because even if the Rodgers thing plays out and he plays 2 years, 3 years, if they don't win the Super Bowl, nobody's guaranteed to be back when Aaron's gone anyway. So even if they do find and have some success with Rodgers, whoever that backup quarterback is, it's probably not going to be coached by Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas when it's time for him to be the starter. So as much as I'd love to say, yeah, just piss off Aaron, put that chip on his shoulder, back-to-back MVPs again, hell yeah, I don't know. It just makes me nervous. And a clipboard holder at the 10th overall pick is not somebody that I'm looking forward to.
Middle rounds, absolutely. Pratt, yes. Jordan Travis.
Oh,
yeah. Pratt. I'm a big Rattler guy. I know he's kind of Rattler going out of the market of the range of where the Jets are, because I don't even think he'll be there at 72, but I wouldn't take him at 72 either. I think that's too rich for a quarterback in this draft in general.
I'm hoping
for the
Travis
Jets
is there in the early hundreds when the Jets pick at like 111.
Or that'd the Ravens nice pick that they got back for Moses at like 132 or whatever that is. Yeah. That's where I
anymore
start the conversation. Like, I'd hope it'd be a little later, but then again, you can't really find quarterbacks that are going to be contributors that late.
Yeah, I mean, this is a different like era that this regime is in, right? They've shifted their mindset, but this is the same organization that last year took Will McDonald and sat him for the entire season. So
yeah,
they're not adverse to taking players and sitting them on the bench.
I do think, because I don't want to do the revisionist history thing. Two things, you know, it's true that I said JSN was the very obvious should be pick in the first round last year, and he wasn't. But when they took Will McDonald, I made the point that Zach just made and said, well, look, they're expecting to be playing with big leads and they'll have fresh legs getting after the quarterback. So I understood that logic. I still don't think it was the right pick for last year. Now, and someone said to me the other day, well, you know, you don't know if you were right because, you know, McDonald's contract hasn't played out. No, for the point I was making, like, and now everyone forgets and doesn't care because Rodgers got hurt, so it wouldn't have mattered. But had Aaron Rodgers stayed healthy and not had another good receiver with Garrett Wilson, that would have hamstrung them, and having JSN would have alleviated that. McDonald wouldn't have helped that. So that, it's forgotten because it didn't matter. But had Rodgers been healthy, that would have been a legitimate complaint.
And instead, they spent a ton of money on Alan Lazard and Mike Williams.
Yeah, yeah. The Lazard thing, I still think was. I mean, it was. I've said before, as poorly as he played, and as much as I've been critical of them signing bad players to help Aaron out, or to make Aaron happy, I do think Lazard was basically receiver was a need. He was the best of a bad free agent crop. They may have gotten him with or without Rodgers, but it hasn't worked out. You can only hope that no one's going to take him in trade. You can't cut him and take a $9 million cap hit just to save $2 million. You just hope the guy bounces back. You know, who knows?
It's crazy
but
that all
you can't count on it, so you have to add somebody.
It's crazy that all these problems surrounding wide receiver, edge, last year's draft, it's all just the mishandling of the Bryce Huff situation. And now seeing that the contract details from the Eagles, it's really upsetting that he couldn't be on the Jets for a 4.3 cap hit and then
but
a 7.1.
I really think Sorry, go ahead, and then I'll make a point about Huff. Go ahead,
I was going to say, Brad Spielberger made a good point on the Turn on the Jets podcast about how the Eagles structure their contracts. So it is a little bit different than how the Jets normally structure their contracts with players. So I understand that part of it, but it does stink to see the contract details of Huff. And in 2027, he's only a $11.5 million cap hit. And that's negligible when the cap is going to be ballooned up so high.
$700 million now.
Exactly. I was just going to say exactly what Wild Wave typed. I think this came down to Bryce Huff wants to be an every down guy, and Robert Saleh does not believe in those.
Yep.
You don't think the Jets would have kept him for $4 million, $5
million? Playing time was definitely a big factor. They would have jumped through hoops
for that. But he's probably saying, I want to play 75% of the snaps. And Robert Saleh saying, in my world, you only play 48% of the snaps, and that's the way I do it. And I don't have Sauce Gardner travel with the best receiver because that's not what I do. It's not best for the team, but it's what I do. And Bryce Huff said, I'm going to go somewhere where they want me on the field, and you can have, you know, what's his name on the Cowboys tearing you up and down the field with Sauce Gardner covering a guy nobody's throwing to. There was a couple games last year. Miami, they didn't have Cheetah, and they just go to Waddle all day, just smoking guys up and down the field. No Sauce. No, that's not what we do. So you better hope you don't play a good team with a really good receiver that just, you know, come playoff time and they say, well, just keep this guy away from Sauce because Saleh doesn't move him.
Well, remember the second time they played them, they reversed it, and then he did shadow the best receiver. Like after that game, they reversed it.
They did as a rookie. They had him shadow Mark Andrews when they played. Yep.
It was the Mets last year, and they were just surviving week to week. Let's just call it what it was. They were just trying to get through the season.
I look at what the Jets do, and this is another thing someone mentioned on the message boards earlier. If Rex had this defense, like if you had Rex's philosophy with this defense, like have Sauce lock down their number one guy, get after the quarterback, like probably a much better unit. But we got Saleh, so we'll live with it. Hope you can overcome him. I think they've added enough on offense to overcome Hackett. You got Rodgers anyway to overcome him. And you hope the veterans, even though Lakin Tomlinson failed here, hopefully these older vet guys know when to listen and when to just kind of roll their eyes when Keith Carter is trying to coach them. So we'll see what happens. We'll see how it plays out. Thanks to Zach Rosenblatt for hopping on and joining us. Thank you, fellas, for getting this done. I got to run. I got to go to work. So that wraps this one up for me and us. And we'll catch you next week. Have a good one, Jets fans.